Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at LPoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we do have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I've brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. And tonight, it's been a hot second since I've been around, and I thank everyone for their patience as there were some items needing to be resolved on my side. But tonight, we're going to be delving into those hard decisions. And the paths that sometimes we have to walk are those choices that we have to make and we don't really want to. And so we're going to look at those. We're going to look at the deliberation on those decisions, perhaps even the aftermath, the consequences of them. Sometimes they're things we can live with and sometimes they're things that we wish we could take back. But unfortunately, we don't always get to unlock those steps. So I'm very excited to be delving into this. And I do believe I have some guests already. The ever wonderful FaZe, I believe. How are you, FaZe?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be back with my friends, hanging out, reading poetry. It's definitely a solve for the soul. So thank you for being here to hang out with me. And I think this other one is Kels. Is this you, Kels?
Yes, it is, my dear.
Yay! Okay, well, I haven't lost my touch in the 2 weeks that I've been gone, so I'm so thankful for that. And how are you both doing tonight?
I'm doing good so far, but I've already taken my meds, so I might fade out kind of quick.
Well, since you already took your meds and you might fade out, do you want to start us off with your piece?
Well, that's totally up to you. I might be able to hold out for a little while.
Well, we'll have you start off, and then worst case scenario, you'll fade out when you need to, and we won't miss getting to hear your work and your voice.
Okay. Sounds all right to me. Oh. Ooh. What to do, what to do. Decisions and more decisions. Choices to make seem difficult. Too many choices or not enough. Pros and cons can be evened up. I have made choices that I regret. On the other hand, sometimes best. Some decisions are easy to decide, like what to cook for dinner time. The hardest choice I ever made was for my daughter in 2005 when she was 8, almost 9, and her femur bone was a tumor. This was on an April Fool's Day, all jokes aside, for my NMA. Options were discussed at length, chemotherapy, surgery, her leg. Only two options were offered up, take out the bone to keep her leg, then replace it with a titanium rod, or amputate, knee down, turn it around. This operation is called a rotationplasty. I chose the first option for my girl. She was too young to be an amputee. In hindsight, I don't know if I was right, even after all the passage of time. I remember more than anything else the fear of making the wrong choice, overshadowed by fear of losing her. Cancer itself is a frightening word. In the end, all was and is well now. She has never said I was wrong. Eventually decided on her own to have the surgery turn around. End poem.
Oh, Kel, this is such a fantastic poem. And I'm so thankful that you were here to read it. And even the willingness to share this difficult decision and event in yours and your daughter's life. Thank you so much for that. And FaZe, would you start us off with your thoughts on this poem?
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm really glad that your daughter is here with us and that, you know, the surgery did what it needs to do, which is, you know, to allow her to recover. So I think you made an important choice just by making the difficult decision to have a surgery. So good. I'm glad about that. And I can see how that would be, you know, a big debate about what type of surgery. But it sounds like it worked out. In terms of the poem, I thought that it was great. It was straightforward, storytelling, and you have a nice, kind of pace to it, so maybe meter, and it's just, it really tells the story in an accessible way where, we feel connected to it, so well done.
Thank you. Oh, she's almost 25, and she is 5 months pregnant, so it's very wonderful. That's the first, and we didn't think she was going to be able to have any.
That's
so amazing.
Phenomenal. Yeah, that's just phenomenal.
Yes.
News. I was going to say, I had a friend in college who had a tumor, a bone tumor herself in her hips, And I know that because of how young she was when that happened, it did take away her ability to have kids. So I can only imagine what a blessing that might be to not only have your daughter, but to get to see her legacy continue on. It's such a uplifting thing, because as a parent, it's so hard to know if you're always doing everything right for your kids. And I think that's what I really appreciate about this poem, is that you really captured the deliberation of the moment. You have to make a decision for your child that is going to impact them for the rest of their life. And you captured that in this. You captured not knowing if it was right or wrong, but even the fear of losing your daughter more than that, because cancer is a frightening word. It is terrifying. Having lost multiple family members to cancer, it pretty much just is like that immediate death sentence. Friend right now who is battling metastatic cancer, it's a death sentence. And it's from breast cancer that she beat when her kids were babies. But now her two youngest kids, who were babies when she beat her breast cancer, are about to graduate high school. And that's what her goal is to live long enough to get to see them graduate. And so I really appreciate that in this poem, you've captured the horror of learning about your daughter's cancer, the struggle to pick what's right for her, that would be best for her, and even the fear of just the idea of losing her, because overarching, that's the biggest fear that a parent would have. So I think this is really quite a stunning piece. And again, I'm so thankful that you were here to share it with us.
Thank you, Victoria and Feziana. Very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing it. All right. And up next, we're going to have Should I Tell Her by Isabella G. And Isabella is younger. She's, from what I understand, right on the cusp of 18-19. So she is legal enough for the show. But, of course, we're putting her early just because there can be other content that is not so appropriate even for someone who's considered an adult. So with that being said, Faith, would you give this one a read?
Sure. Should I Tell Her by Isabella G. Should I tell her the things you did, the way you messed with me? Should I tell her the things you said when we were alone and hiding? Should I tell her about your fingers and the way they forced themselves in? Should I tell her how you broke me and broke your family in the process? I should have told her when it happened, because now she believes you instead of me. End poem.
A fantastic read, Faith. And this is obviously a poem that's pretty heavy. It definitely gives the idea of an inappropriate relationship, of someone who is married, who takes things by force. I dated a guy a few years back, and this is what this reminds me of. I dated a guy a few years back, and it came out in the course of our relationship that he was actually married. And it's hard to feel like you can even give consent when you don't know the full range of that person and their relationship. But this is obviously one that goes even that step further. And it's devastating. It's devastating to not be seen as something more than just a homewrecker, someone trying to be a homewrecker, from my experience. Because if I'd known, then his wife would have been told. And I couldn't find his wife after the fact. I tried. But even the idea of someone who's been taken advantage of, it's hard to know what to say in those moments, because in one way you're going to be viewed however that person views it. They could kill the messenger for all they want. But at the same time, as time goes on, the question then becomes, well, why didn't you say something sooner? And suddenly your motives are called into question. And so I think that this is a really hard piece to read, not just for its subject matter, but also because she really does capture the tone, the mood of how do you go to another human being and tell them what happened to you, that you did not willingly participate in. How do you go and tell them without knowing whether it will be well received, whether you'll be villainized, if you say it in a soon enough time, and even like that fading, the losing of validity as time passes on. I think this is such a strong piece, such a deep piece, and vulnerable, because not only is she exposing her own hurt, so the deliberation and the fear that too much time has passed, but just really a stunning right. And Kels, what did you think of this? Did the meat monster get you, Kels?
Yes. I thought this was a very deep hitting emotional right. It's not always easy, even for an adult, to admit that they've been abused, let alone a child, and to not know how to handle it. How do you handle such a situation? You know, it's very difficult, you know, because you feel shame, and you always feel like it's your fault that something, you know, inappropriate was done to you, you know, and it's not their fault. It could never be their fault. I mean, there's an abuser and he's taking advantage of you. That's just wrong, so wrong. And to have an adult not believe them, that's even worse if you ask me. Especially if it's a mother or an aunt or whatever the situation may be, you know, this is devastating. And how do you handle that? It's just very difficult. My heart goes out to this little girl.
Absolutely. Well, and it's even suggested in this, she lets us know that, well, she lets us know one person read it as a father doing something to their daughter. And she does let us know in her comments that it was an uncle done to the niece. But you're right. I mean, it is devastating. It's hard to talk as someone who has been a sexual assault victim. It is hard to talk about those things. In fact, part of the reason I was away for 2 weeks was I was helping my sister. She's finally decided to divorce her abuser. And we had a lot of conversations. The military flat out asked her, were all the instances that he took advantage of her, was she consenting in any of them? And her response was, I was never allowed to not consent. And so rightfully, the commander said, so it was rape. And I remember my sister's devastation that night because she didn't want to be called a victim. She didn't want to be seen as a victim. And it really calls into terms how the people who have lived through it, the people that have had these things perpetrated against them, not only have to reconcile what has happened to them, but how they also, in many ways, need to be able to name it what they want when they want it. Because she doesn't want to call it rape. Because that means that the one person that she's been with her whole life, that's all he did to her. And so I love what you said there, Kels. I love the reminder that it's hard to talk about, be it an adult or a child. It is a hard thing to talk about and admit and go through. So thank you for that stunning comment. And Faith, what did you think?
I think this is such a difficult topic, so I really respect her for being able to express it and, you know, to have the bravery to put it out there and to admit that difficulty that she's having with telling people in her real life, because there is that questioning of should you tell, who can you tell, and I like that there's so many questions within the poem, because I think that's common in the victim to be questioning themselves, to be questioning what they can do, now I'm not saying it's their fault at all, it's not at all, but they tend to question if it is their fault, and if people will see shame in them for it happening, and will they be in some way considered guilty in what happened. So there's this questioning about who do you tell, and I think that it's really important that there are questions within the poem, because it really shows that thought process of those doubts that get instilled in you. And then the ending where it talks about the regret that she didn't speak up at the time, because later on it's not as easy to get people to listen sometimes. So that is definitely, you know, it's such a heartbreaking story. And I think that it really makes me think about how, like, there was this big movement of Me Too, and it was good because people were speaking their truths. But then some people who were skeptics seemed to think that, oh, they're just jumping on the bandwagon and saying Me Too to get their share of the attention. And I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think people are pretending to have experiences. I think that they finally felt that there were people who were going to believe them, people who were going to listen, and they saw people in solidarity with them, and so they shared. But because it wasn't spoken at the time, some people are skeptical about motives, like you were saying, Victoria, and it's just so sad to not have people be receptive to your truth. This is absolutely heartbreaking, and I think that she did it in a really kind of tasteful way. It shows the emotion while still, you know, keeping some of her privacy.
Beautifully said. And I love how you even brought in the Me Too movement. I have my own thoughts sometimes about that movement, but the beauty of it is that it's allowed people, like you said, to come out and speak their truth, speak those moments. And the thing that people often are looking for when someone says, you know, oh, well, I was sexually assaulted. They want the people who were molested. They want the people who were taken advantage of. They want the people where there's something that was actually happened, but it's not just always an action. It's not always physical. Sometimes it's the mental game. It's the emotional game. It's the physical intimidation without actually touching people. And I think that that's where the Me Too movement really did go right, is showing that it's not all just one brush stroke, that it comes in many forms, and that what may mean to be innocent or playful, however inappropriate, is still an assault when it is not wanted and is not requested. So thank you for that reminder, Faze, and thank you for that fantastic comment. All right, up next, we have Act 3, Scene 1, Fluid Space by Blue Leader 1, and I'll give this to read. I am lost, afloat, alone in the dark. The world seems infinite, and particularly finite specks of flotism. That is me. Direction is impossible to tell except down, below. That direction is absolutely certain and therefore ultimately beguiling. How easy it would be to just let go. End poem. And Faze, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Sure. I like that it talks about the direction being impossible to tell and then saying the direction is absolutely certain. And I think that kind of shows that there's nothing that's totally certain, because it seems one way and then it's the other. It's impossible or it's certain. And there's a contradiction there that even within this very short poem, you've completely switched it around. The finite speck of flotsam, that is me. That the idea that you're just like such a tiny thing in the grand scheme of things, that if you look at how big the universe is and how long time is, that you can feel really insignificant, and yet you can also be really important. And there's that kind of contradiction within itself. I find this very interesting, and trying to make it, for me, that this is a hard decision, because you're trying to decide, you know, what is real for you, I think. And there's just so much that you can get lost in existentially. So this isn't maybe one particular decision. It's kind of like the idea that, like, everything is such a huge decision of who you are. Really cool.
Beautifully said. And I love how you even brought in the existential perspective. It actually makes me think of both Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky and The Stranger by Albert Camus, because both are kind of based upon their own existentialism. The Stranger is French existentialism specifically. But what I like about that is that how you kind of mentioned being kind of aimlessly, but you know where ground is, you know where down is. And it very distinctly reminds me of the scene in The Stranger. For those that don't know, The Stranger by Albert Camus is French existentialism, and it's about a gentleman who really hasn't given anything a life. His mother is in a retirement home. She's taken on a lover. He doesn't really understand it. He's kind of with one girl, but, you know, she's just kind of there for now. She's probably going to run off and find someone else. Well, on a hot day, he is out in the blinding sun, and he ends up killing a guy just to get out of the sun. And he goes through the trial, and his girlfriend is weeping, and he's just very unaffected. And it ends with him actually being in jail awaiting his execution. And kind of at the end, he's just like, I understand now why Mama took a lover. But you remind me of that, kind of how that scene plays out in The Stranger, where in that moment, it was just blinding, and he didn't really know where he was going. He didn't really know what he was doing. All he knew is that he wanted to get out of the sun. And so he made that decision, and it came with consequences that he had not considered at the time. And I think that in a lot of ways, existentialism is exactly that. Sometimes it's just this overwhelming moment of life and the uncontrolled, and trying to figure out where we are in it and how we fit in and what control and what power we have versus what we don't. And sometimes that makes us act on impulses that we don't necessarily mean to or want to or don't fully consider, like the existential dread of your midlife crisis. And so I kind of love that perspective, because it's really resonating with me in reference to my favorite book. So I think that was really quite a stunning comment, because while it's kind of got that beautiful jumbled nature to it, it also really pinpoints that existentialist kind of unknown and all the questions without the answers, and the actions with the unknown consequences. Or sometimes they're known and we still just don't think about them. So that's what I mean to say. It was a fantastic comment. And with that, I would like to actually welcome Pam onto the show. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Victoria. Hi, Kyle. And
hey.
Hi, Diana. Good to hear y'all.
Yeah, glad to have you here. Glad to have everyone here. We're having fun so far. I'm going to have Kel's comment real quick, just in case you haven't had a chance to read this piece, and then we'll come to you. What do you think, Kel?
Oh, excuse me. I thought this was a very interesting poem. It's like not so much lost in space, but lost in his own self, in his own mind. He doesn't know which way to go, which way to turn. Making a decision can be very difficult. I'm sorry, my asthma is just being really difficult. Yeah, I thought this was a very good poem, and I really enjoyed Faze's remarks on it. Well done. Well said.
It really is a piece that kind of leaves us grappling at it, at what it could mean, how we each interpret it. And I think it's really poignant in that way, because it's not necessarily just their experience, but also it allows us to relate to it, how it might need to relate to us, our own situations in which we felt that way. So, stunning comment. And Pam, did you get a chance to read this? Do you have any thoughts?
I did, yes. I really like how it has a very philosophical feel to it. Afloat in the dark, the world seems infinite. That is just such a perfect description of what it feels like when you like look up into the night sky and all the stars. To me, I really got the whole idea. Well, first of all, I really like the choice of the title, Act 3, Scene 1, you know, Flute Bass. It's the whole idea. To me, by making it Act 3, it's nearing the end of that scene, and there's going to be a transition. And I really see the whole idea of contemplating suicide. The whole idea of, you know, is life worth living? And I think that's where it comes in, the idea that at that moment, the only direction that you can look at is down, is below. And I really think that makes the last two lines very powerful, how easy it would be to just let go. And obviously, you know, since he or she has written this poem, they didn't let go. You know, they held on. And I think that speaks volumes in the whole idea of acknowledging that when you acknowledge that you could have let go, that it would have been easy to let go, but you chose not to, a really important message to send to people. So that's my thoughts, and it was a wonderful brevity and very well done.
I think those are wonderful thoughts, though, because of all the things that we've talked about in this poem so far, there really is that strength of the contemplation of letting go, of saying, I'm done, and floating off into your own oblivion, but choosing not to, choosing to continue forward and to pursue life, even how distasteful we find it at that time. That really is a strength, and there is a beauty to it. Because it is easy to let go in so many ways. It is easy to think of only ourselves and call the final curtain call, but to continue on despite that, despite feeling lost and jumbled and possibly even abandoned. That is the harder decision to make. And it does give that idea and that title, like you were mentioning, that it's more than just a single moment, but this is a scene from a play, and that play is not yet done. So, stunning comment, Pam. I really love this piece. Blue Leader One has been writing for a few of LMP's contests, at least a couple of mine, And I always love their work because I think it really causes those deep contemplations. It can be about the existentialism like FaZe is talking about. It can be about those darker contemplations of moments in life when we don't really want to continue on, like Pam was talking about. It can also be those moments in our lives that isn't necessarily a full calling of a midlife crisis or even to continue on. Sometimes it's just those really crummy situations that neither path are really tasteful. Those moments when we have to make a move that we didn't want to, that we're forced into, and we realize that in the infinite nature of the world, we are just this speck. We are irrelevant. That while my life is chaotic, there are other people's whose life is golden and grand, and they're living it up. And it reminds us how small we are. A while back, when I first joined the radio, I did a contest on the word Sonder, which is a realization that everybody else lives a life equally as complex as ours, and that we are but a shadow in a window, or the voice in the corner of a coffee shop, or perhaps even a figure driving by as we go about our way. And this, in many ways, reminds me of that. It reminds me of how we get so wound up in our own story that often we forget that in the grand scheme of things, we don't really mean much. And in that, it might be easy to let go. It might be maddening to realize how little we mean. But one thing is certain is that we can choose to keep stepping and walking forward, or we can stop and go down and bury ourselves. And I like how this theme is left open-ended. They don't give us a resolution. They just leave us with that thought that it would be easy to let go. But they never say that they do. They never say that they don't stop. They never say that they stop walking. They never say that they let go. They never say any of this. They just recognize the chaos of the situation, and we wait for the next scene. Because sometimes when you're in that place in life, that's all that you can do. So I think it's really quite a fantastic piece. And I know I say that about a lot of poems on this show, but I truly love Blue Leader One's writing because it really does call us into those moments and make us stop and think and ruminate on them. And that is what good poetry makes you do. So thank you, Blue Leader One, for sharing this with us. And up next, I'm going to put FaZe to work. She unwittingly, well, I know that she didn't unwittingly say this, but she gave us a piece, so I'm going to make her read it. FaZe, take it away.
Okay, this wasn't 100% done because I was just throwing it together right before the show, but here we go. Hard Choices by Faziana. I could have had weekly brunch, joining the family for a munch, attending old friends' baby showers, working retail, counting the hours, hating 5 out of 7 days to be the daughter that stays. I chose stale muffins alone, relationships by phone, in exchange, a dream job for an idealistic geek, providing the purpose that I seek, perfect balance of silly and concentration, labor of love, igniting motivation. In order to find myself, I lost connection. And poem.
So I really love this poem. You say that it's a rough draft, basically. I think that this is a diamond, and not just a diamond in the rough. And this is why. So often in life, we are told that if we do a certain thing, act a certain way, follow a certain path, that we will be fulfilled. And one of the greatest struggles that I've actually had to deal with myself over these last 2 weeks with my sister, I always wanted to be a mom. I lived my life as a little girl, learning how to care for a house. how to be a stay-at-home wife. I learned how to fold and cook and clean and quilt and cross-stitch. I learned how to do all the things to organize. I grew up with two siblings, and my sister and my brother. My brother has always been very much the traditional male. He's going to work. His wife is not traditional roles. Nothing wrong with them. Nothing right with them. Just is. My sister always wanted to be a veterinarian. She never once showed interest in baby dolls, in being a housewife, and none of that. My life has not allowed me to be a stay-at-home mom. In fact, I'm the primary breadwinner, and I have a kept husband with two kids, which is great. I'm proud of that. But I still wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. My sister, on the other hand, has two kids, has had the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom. She's also a veterinarian now. And while I was there, I watched both my nieces struggle because my sister was still encompassed in all her own struggles, that she did not have time for her own kids. She was so worried about her other friends who needed her that she did not provide the life and the attention that her children needed. And that was very hard for me to see. It was hard for me to hear about her dreams after the divorce of going on adventures for 2 weeks at a time to Australia, knowing that she would leave her children behind. That's a really hard thing for me, because that is nothing that I've ever desired. And I've seen the effect on my nieces. But that being said, that's my sister's perfect path. That's the path my sister wants to be. And she is not the golden child, but she is definitely a favored one with my mother. And that's hard because I've spent my whole life trying to be the perfect daughter, trying to be the perfect mother. I'm in therapy because I have, per my therapist, more higher standards for myself than Jesus did himself. And yet I found that when I became a working mother, I felt lost. I didn't know who I was because I didn't know how to be a mom and be me. I didn't know how to be working and be the me that I had always planned on. And I never intended to have a kept husband. But I love this piece because it reminds us that we get to make our own path. We get to walk our own path. And the path that we walk is not always going to be the ideal path that everybody else tells us that it's supposed to be. I may not understand my sister's path. I may question what it will do to my nieces. But I don't get to dictate her path. I just get to love and accept her. Just as I may not always like my own, my path to walk and my path to love and learn and thrive in and express myself as I am, whether it's what my family would have wanted for me or not. And you remind us of this. There are all these paths in life, things that we are told, things that we choose, ways in which we compromise ourselves and possibly lose connection to ourselves. But so long as we are true to the core of us, we can always find that reconnection. And so I think that's what I really love about this piece, is that it reminds us that even our own perfect path does not mean that we're always going to be true to ourselves, but we can always rediscover ourselves, and it gives us hope. So I'm not sure if that's what you intended, but that's what I got from it. So just a stunning right phase.
Thank you.
And Pam, oh, of course. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this. I like that, you wrote about making the choice to move away from family, you know, and you, you could have, and family and friends, I mean, as you see in the first chance, there's so many things that you could have had. But in sticking around and having those, you would have been losing a part of yourself. And so you made that choice to go to that job that was perfect for you, to find yourself. And I really like this all the way through, but I like how you say, I chose stale muffins alone, relationships by phone, and exchange a dream job for an idealistic geek. I thought those were really clever lines. The last line, in order to find myself, I lost connection. That's just really a powerful line, and the whole idea that, you know, as when you move away, there are people you lose connection with. But the idea that you find yourself is just the biggest reward of all. So really a wonderful write and very well done.
That was really beautifully said, Pam. And I love how you even emphasize that sometimes those choices that others would make for us, or often the choices that others would make for us, do not allow us to remain true to ourselves, and so we have to make those hard decisions to step away. Stunning comment. And Kels, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was an excellent write about, you know, making the hard choices of what.
Did I drop?
You did not. Maybe Kel did.
Okay.
I was talking to myself. I was having a wonderful conversation. I'm telling you.
You know, I bet you have to comment. If you'd like to repeat it, I would love to listen.
I think this is very, a very well-written poem. You know, it's very difficult to make choices between what you could be doing with family and friends, or with your jobs or relationships or anything else. But you have to, you know, make decisions on your own time, on your own efforts, on your own beliefs. And I think that's what she's saying here. And, you know, sometimes when you do that, you do lose connection with those people that mean so much to you. But it's not always possible to do things the way other people want you to do, or to be there when they want you to be there, because you do have other obligations to yourself, and that's very important. And I think you wrote that very well. Good job, Faith.
Beautifully said, Kel. And yes, sometimes we do have to make those hard decisions that let us be true to ourselves. So stunning, stunning comment. And now, since we have Pam, I'm actually going to have Pam read us her piece. Go ahead and take that away when you are ready.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. The echoes of conversation. And it goes like this. You are a dried husk. Empty echoes of conversation and laughter, living flesh sucking on tubes, mechanical breaths, a cacophony of shrill beeps and damaged bones. Press one for yes, press two for goodbye. Goodbye, Katie did. Goodbye, lost piano music. Memories collecting dust. You always spoke clearly with an independent spirit. Never let me be a burden to anyone. Hold the plug as a sharp note of finality, like signing the lease on a house filled with tears, a ringtone of no more, no more, no more. The last beat of your heart took the 5:30 train bound for a better place. I can see you digging into dark, rich soil, making heaven beautiful with every flower you plant. I can hear you playing Beethoven and singing George Thorogood. I thought letting you go was the most difficult decision I ever made, and it was at the time. But for the last 4 years, I've discovered the most difficult decisions are making the holidays happy for my children, your grandchildren. Every smile and off-key Christmas carol hiding my New Year grief and hope. I'm sorry.
Oh, Pam. First, please don't apologize. This poem gives me goosebumps. And hearing the emotion in your voice, knowing that it's about the passing of your mother 4 years ago on the 31st of December. This is heartbreaking and stunning and raw and beautiful. So thank you for not just sharing your words, but sharing the expression of your soul and the emotion that comes with it. It is truly fantastic. I'm going to have Faith start off with comments, if you would, Faith.
Yeah.
Oh, Pam, I'm so sorry for your loss. This really brought tears to my eyes. You share such beautiful emotion in this. Your connection and love for your mother is seen here. And, you know, there's the horrible part of the illness, the mechanical breaths, the cacophony of shrill beeps. I know those hospital sounds, that is not a good thing. But then you remember the happier sounds, the music, and you when you're talking about the digging in the soil, making heaven beautiful with every flower, that is absolutely beautiful. Where is it now? Oh, I lost the part. The last beat of your heart took the 5:30 train bound for a better place. Making it the 5:30 train, acknowledging that it's a transition, is beautiful. And then at the end, talking about how, you know, the time of year is still really hard on you, but you're putting on that brave face and trying to do holiday things to give your children the kind of positive memories that you want them to have. And that is such a tough thing to do when you are feeling the grief. But I mean, I really respect you, first of all, being honest about these feelings, but also for, you know, making that connection with your children and, honoring how she would want it for her grandkids. But I mean, like, allow yourself time for grief, but maybe in trying to do the fun things for your children, it will become a positive thing for you as well. Imaginary hugs.
Thank you very much. Yeah, most of the time throughout the year I usually do pretty good. It's just near the holidays that it really starts to get to me. But I figured, you know, with a show like this, it was a good opportunity to write about it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you did, because there really is that hard decision in this, interwoven into this. And even like I said at the beginning, it talks even about those after effects, those unforeseen little consequences, if you will, which is such a harsh word to say, but those unforeseen impacts that ripple through our life thereafter. So truly, it's phenomenal. And Kels, what did you think of this piece?
Oh, golly, I thought I was going to cry. Just hearing the emotion in her voice was just heartbreaking. I love you, Pam. Virtual hugs all around. This is a beautiful, absolutely beautiful tribute to what sounds like a very wonderful woman and an excellent mother. I know how difficult it is to lose your parents. And it is heart-wrenching. And, you know, you have some beautiful memories, and sometimes that helps. Sometimes it's just cathartic because it releases some of the pain inside, and that counts for a lot, too. So very beautiful, right? And God bless you, honey.
Thank you. I love you, too. Yeah, I will say, though, of my mother, that she was a very good person. She struggled so much, though, with severe depression and alcoholism, that it was a very – she actually left when I was, like, 10 years old, and I didn't really reconnect with her until I was an adult. So, you know, there was a lot of rocky roads to get to the relationship we had. And there were times where, I mean, and everything I say in my poem is true, because that was, you know, those were the good and beautiful things about her. But, you know, there was also, you know, the struggles and, you know, the things that were difficult to deal with. You understand how that is, yeah.
Yes, my mother was abusive. But, you know, it's just, you still love them no matter what, because they are your mother, they're your father, whatever the situation could be, you still love them no matter what. And that's, you know, and losing them isn't any easier for knowing how much they hurt you in the past. So beautifully done.
Thank you.
Beautifully said, Kels, and thank you again, Pam, for sharing that. I have to say, Grandpa, I grew up with two grandpas and one grandma, because one of my grandmas died when my dad was 18, but I never got to meet her because he had me when he was 31, so I wasn't even a twinkle in his eye. But my last grandpa, died December 30th, 2015. And I remember getting that call, and I remember that my then, now husband, then boyfriend, we're going to a friend's house for New Year's Eve. And ever since then, for the last 6 years, there's always kind of that reminder, the overshadow of it, that kind of hangs in the air. And so I think what really struck me through all of this was that, yeah, you captured a lot of beauty. You captured perhaps the chirping of the katydid, the goodbye of the lost piano music, the tinkering of the keys, the little beauty, the independent spirit that is kind of snuffed out when life takes people away from us. And not just in the finality of death, but even the way in which people pass. I have an uncle who had small cell lung cancer. There's large cell lung cancer and small cell lung cancer. The small cell does not respond to chemo. And so I watched that uncle fade away to the extent that when he passed, he did not know who my aunt was. He could not speak. He was just not aware. And he was a motorcycle cop who lost a leg while on the job. So to see this tall, burly man shriveled into a husk, like you kind of start out with, was astonishing, because you start to realize that the person that you love is just not there. The image of them is a very sad image of them is there. But when they die around the holidays, when they pass, when that physical embodiment of them pass, it really does leave those extra little ripple effects. Tarnishes those days, because then we're left remembering. It's easy for me to miss when my one grandma passed. I always remember it's in September. But I'm not always conscious of the day, because it was just another day. It was the 21st, and until I really think, oh yeah, grandma died. It's just not really at the forefront of my mind, but come December 30th, I know the day. And so the fact that your mom passed on the 31st, I can imagine, is only more of those ripples more of those memories, both for you as her daughter, even with the relationship that you grew with and then worked to form later on, but also the grandkids, because if she was like my mother, who's narcissistic, she's not always the greatest mother to me, but my daughters love her. And so you worry about them because they too remember those days. They too remember those moments. And so you work to make these happy memories all with this shadow kind of looming over. And I think that's what really struck me about this piece. There's the farewell, the understanding of your actions, the pull the plug finality, but also how that ghost just sort of lingers thereafter, especially around these holidays. It's that minor chord Christmas carol that kind of just fills the air, and the Happy New Year, which isn't so happy anymore because it's a reminder that another year has gone by without this person, who, how great or bad or big or small, still had an impact in a place in our life that is no longer there. And I think that's what...
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's just a phenomenal piece. So, anyways, I'll stop ranting. It was fantastic, Pam, and I'm so thankful that you shared it.
And thank you for the inspiration.
I was a terrible host and did not get the SoundCloud loaded. So, Kels, if you would be so kind as to read this.
I would be honored to. Going On Into Tomorrow by Martha Ghetto. Just don't expect me to sing. Because I would probably totally mess it up. Okay. When the one who made my world had to leave, all in my heart I could do was grieve. The sadness was tearing me apart as it invaded every corner of my heart. It felt like I was going under. The woman in the mirror, I no longer knew her. It's the hardest thing I ever had to do, you know. It took me years, but I had to let him go. I had to find a way, the sorrow behind me, to leave it in my heart, to find some relief. So I set my heart forward and began to try to find something besides grief to occupy my mind. I went online to find someone to talk to, someone who could help me through. It took years, but I finally found the one who could help me keep my feet on the ground. Now, though, I still miss the one I lost, and sometimes in my heart, I still pay the cost. With the one I love beside me, I'm moving on. I'll always love him, but I accept that he's gone. A new life awaits me now, and I go forward to it now. Though the man I loved, we are apart, I will keep him forever in my heart. But the decisions I made so long ago, that I had to move forward from him and go, and so. Now I step into the future, my head held high. I still love him, but at least I can tell him goodbye. End poem.
Beautiful read, Kels, and a fantastic write by Martha Gettle. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts?
Absolutely. First of all, I thought this was a wonderful rhyme and couplet. And what I really like about this poem is that it acknowledges the grief. It doesn't try to push the grief down or push it away. It knows, you know, she knows that grief has its place. And to me, the general message I get from this is that one of the most difficult things to do is continue to move forward with life as you just also continue to acknowledge the love that you have in your heart for somebody who has passed on. And I really like, so I had to find a way, the sorrow behind me to leave, and in my heart to find some relief. So I set my heart forward and began to try to find something besides grief to occupy my mind. And I think it's how many people get into writing poetry or other crafts or ways of expressing themselves, is because it helps them to process the grief. It helps them to find something else to focus their mind on. Yeah, I thought this was just a wonderful write and very well done.
Pam, and I agree. There really are those moments where you can either drown in your grief or you can find ways to go beyond it. It doesn't mean that you move past it or that you let it go, but you find a way to live with it. And so I love that stanza you pointed out. So I set my heart forward and began to try to find something besides grief to occupy my mind. Stunning comment. And Faith, what did you think of this?
I think it's really beautiful how she acknowledges that, like, she'll always love him, but that he just can't be, like, the center of her life anymore, you know? He's still someone who's important, but she has to, you know, acknowledge that he's not there with her, that she's lost him. And so it's that finding that balance where they're still a part of you, but they aren't the primary part anymore. You allow yourself to have other things. And I think for some people, when you're grieving, it's really hard to get past that initial stage, partly because at least when you're in your deep grieving and having all the feelings, you feel connected to them because they're still such a big part of your life. And when you stop thinking about them all the time, it's like a whole other stage of losing them, where you've lost the normalcy of having them there. When it starts to feel normal to not have them around, that's like another stage of loss, where you feel grief all over again, the grief of moving on. Okay, I'm not explaining that, but it's like it's a different, not just a stage in getting over them, but it's a whole other pain to realize that you're doing life without them. I think that it's great to hear that she's found new love, and you know, it is a difficult decision to make that leap to start looking again. That's a, you know, it's a very big step, and it's a difficult one because I think a lot of people, when they've lost their first love, they feel a little bit guilty, like they're betraying their first person, even though, you know, they're not. They're moving on with their life as they should. But there is that kind of feeling, and then there's also the fear of losing someone again, because they've already gone through this horrible pain, and to love again opens you up for that pain. So it's a difficult decision to open yourself to love again. But I thought this was a beautiful tribute to her first love and an acknowledgement of the importance of allowing yourself to move on.
I really love what you said there about how they're really, the grief comes in those multiple stages, and that sadness undertone of it. Yes, when you are deep within the grief just after the loss, when you lament each moment without them, you do feel connected. And even though you said you didn't think you were explaining it well, I get what you meant, that there's suddenly that realization that you didn't think of them as often as you did. Perhaps you didn't think of them at all. And it's become normal for them not to be there, not to tiptoe across your thoughts and remember that loss. And suddenly you have these aha moments that you've lost the need for them to be there. You've lost another component. And I think that is such a poignant moment to point out, because though she's found someone, and yes, like you, I'm so thankful that she has, there's still that new loss that comes with it, because now she doesn't necessarily miss his companionship the same way that she did. This new person is not a replacement for him. It's a completely different love and doesn't take away from it, but she just doesn't need it as she did once before. So I think that was really quite a stunning comment, Dave. Thank you. What I really liked about it is that first and foremost, Martha has spoken about the loss of her husband many times. And she always brings this new vibrancy to it, a new perspective. It can be the sadness of a loss. It can be a moment that she's remembering, or it can be something like this, going on to tomorrow. Not necessarily tomorrow as in Monday for me or Tuesday for people who are on the East Coast, but or even the Central, but even that tomorrow when life is just not today, it doesn't have the same feeling and anxieties and frustrations and sadness. It's the tomorrow that will come and always does come when things change. The tomorrow when she found a gentleman to keep her company, even if they aren't together. It's the tomorrow of the life that's awaiting her, and the tomorrow of knowing that she still loves her husband, that she still loves the man that she lost, but that she no longer pines after him, after she no longer wishes to return to that relationship, because tomorrow has come and she has something for now to keep her company, and it is sufficient. And it doesn't mean that she doesn't look back on yesterday, but she does look forward to tomorrow. And that's such a different place to be in grief, much like Faze was talking about. And so for that, I think it was just a really, really fantastic poem, because it reminds us that tomorrow always comes. And Kels, having read it, what did you think?
I almost cried, okay? Just reading this, because I don't even know. It's heart-wrenching. I am so glad she's able to find someone else. I really am. And it's not so much moving on. It's letting go. I always picture it as my husband's hand coming down and letting go of mine. Okay? And that seems to be more what it's all about than simply moving on, because it's not the same thing. I have my husband's ashes here, which probably doesn't help any. But I've got a really funny story that might help me get through this, if you don't mind.
Please do.
When we were on a plane coming home from Australia, I had his little box. It's a little plastic box in one of my totes. And I asked the flight attendant to help me put it up in the carry-all, you know, the overhead bins. And I told him, I said, well, be careful because my husband is in there. And he just looked at me and just, what the hell are you talking about? And I said, it's my husband's ashes. But the look on his face was absolutely priceless. You know, your husband, what's he doing in a bag? This is a very deep and touching subject, and it's very difficult for me. So I'm going to move on from here, okay? And I'm probably going to go ahead and go because I'm getting really tired. So I love you ladies, and I hope the rest of your evening is wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for being here and for sharing your comments and your souls and just sharing the good and the bad and the heartache. I truly appreciate you, Kel. You have a great night.
You too, honey.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it looks like Pam also dropped. I'm going to suspect that she's probably going to call back in. But in the meantime, we are going to move on to Namya's piece. And I'll get that posted and I'll give this to you. This is The Dance a poem by Nanya. Standing on the precipice of yet another abyss, how many times have I been here, contemplating the dive? It's a complicated dance I have invented with the Reaper, not unlike a waltz, but in a 6-8 instead of a 3-4. But with her hand on my waist and mine on her shoulder, we twirl and twirl above the gaping maw of the void, waiting for her hand to let go. My heart skips a beat as I see a twinkle in her coal-lined eyes. But she embraces me instead and whispers, "Not yet." And I wake up in the midst of strangers, tubes coming in and out of me, throat raw from forced vomiting, trembling and weak. I gasp for air. I glimpse as she's smiling at me, as the doctors fuss over my recovery. It was touch and go, they said. The next I looked up, she's gone. She gave me one more chance. And as decisions go, this was my hardest yet. To live as I could for as long as I should and wait for her, then force her hand. End of poem. Oh, I have chills from this. And you are the only one here with me, Faith, so would you mind sharing your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a little choked up too. Mamya, this is such an amazing write. It's such raw emotion and yet so carefully crafted. In terms of content, it's just very intense. And I love the decision at the end. And while that is such a difficult decision to go on through the pain, I'm so happy that you're here with us. That idea to wait for her rather than force her hand. You word that so perfectly. Without using the word suicide, it is clearly here. I like that you made the Reaper a woman, which I've, for some reason, I don't think I've ever seen before. Usually I see the Grim Reaper as a man. But this Reaper who you're dancing with, and she's kind of like this temptation who's warning you, not now, is really beautifully developed. The idea of seeing her there while you're struggling and as the doctors help, it's so well developed. And in terms of style, the way Dive is written, so only one letter on each line and it cascades down, is really well done. And then the stanzas after that are on a slant, like you're taking the steps downward. And then the slant changes a little bit later on after Not Yet, where it seems like you're falling less dramatically. The steps become less steep. And even though it's still a struggle, you're making your way through. And I think stylistically, you managed to add to what was already an extremely powerful poem just by changing the spacing. I have a lot of respect for this poem.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. It is really stylistically a fantastic piece. Because after that dive, like you said, it is like those steps. And then, of course, the Not Yet being isolated out is almost like a landing. And instead of being taken up to heaven or to the afterlife, she is instead walked back down into her body. So fun fact, actually, because I just recently was doing a deep dive on death, which sounds, I don't know, take it as you will. There's actually quite a few cultures that have the female Grim Reaper. And like you, I grew up in a culture that has a male Reaper. But any of the romantic languages, especially like Spanish, French, Latin, Portuguese, I think, maybe even Romanian, Italian, muerta is actually a feminine word. And so death is actually more often embodied as a woman and not a man. And there's a after Coco, which came out about Dia de los Muertos, there was another book called Book of the Dead, and it shows the male-female counterparts. But, yeah, it's always interesting culturally to see how death is embodied, because when you come from a culture where the Grim Reaper is a male, the way that he was always depicted to me growing up was that he was kind of this cold, dark, you know, future yet to come kind of figure, not really a conversationalist, not really interested in having any kind of talks, just there to get a job done, and it is his way or not. But in this, the Grim Reaper is very personable. It's a dance, it's a waltz, and it's not necessarily the 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so it's a little bit of a quicker pace because life is not yet slowing down. And so I actually really appreciated that too. And as she dances with her, there's this pause, this love of not yet. When she returns her back, she sees her back into her body and sends her on her way again. It is not a cold someone who is there as a guide, who is part of the process. And I think that's such a beautiful depiction that Nanyao has here. Now, on the topic that she is speaking, while she has painted this beautiful relationship between the two, there's also that really hard realization of what has happened. Her stomach had to be pumped. She took pills, more than likely, to the extent that they had to pump her stomach. There was an attempt that was made there. She did not stop at the semicolon, but death put it there, added the comma to that period. And I think that's what is really quite interesting about this piece, the hinting that Mamya has been there, or at least this care been there, and was ready to dive into the gaping maw, but death and the doctors stopped her. And what she comes back from that, the mist of strangers, the tubes coming out of her, a raw throat, trembling, gasping for air, she's not excited to be there. She knows that there's a long game here, that she was given a chance for a reason, and so she's going to take it, even though she doesn't necessarily want to have had this choice made for her. And as someone who has battled depression and lost a loved one to suicide, I wish that he had taken a route that had a chance of walking back some, because often that is not the case. And so I'm thankful that Mamya has that choice, because at least from my interactions with her, she's a remarkable human being, and as this poem shows, a remarkable poet. Even if life is sometimes hard, it makes us wish that we could take a dive of our own. So stunning, stunning poem and a fantastic write. So thank you, Manuel, for sharing this. Up next, we have Footprints in a Blizzard by Duncan Ross Bell. And Faith, would you give this one a read if I get it posted?
Sure. Footprints in a Blizzard by Duncan Ross Bell. The tangible within the yearning, the learning from the ever-present, sentiment like a snowflake, a detriment to the lust. A cause is a denial, a vial of gator tears, a trickle for the torment, a volume for the fears. Night of crimson, sunrise, reprise, dull shadows to shade, allow one more memory to fade. Evade the focus, allow the loss. I am alone, but I'm better. I am alone, but I'm better. I am alone, but I'm alone. End poem.
Fantastic read, Faith. Thank you. And what a stunning write by Duncan Ross Bell. So often in life, we can kind of be stuck in that blizzard, in that hurricane, and we can keep reassuring ourselves that we know that way, we know that tree. We can still make out our footprints. But what's even more startling is that so often we do not think of these blizzards in the sense of them. When we say blizzard, we think of the blinding snow. We think of the whiteout that comes with it. But usually it starts with a snowflake. It starts with just a gentle, peaceful moment. And it's in that snowflake, the building, the moment of pause, that we end up caught in these storms. And what really stuck out to me is specifically, I am alone, but I'm better. I am alone, but I'm better. I am alone, but I'm alone. So often when we've made these decisions, that be it due to lust or due to a desire to not be alone or just greed or what have you, so often in these decisions, we always can say, but I'm living my true self, but I'm making more money, but I now feel love. But often once that storm has really captured us, that's when we start to realize that we aren't always better off. We can say that we are. Perhaps we felt better off when the snow was kind of falling and it was pretty and we thought that it was a new blanket and we were starting afresh. But sometimes we can finally just realize that we are in fact alone and we are lost and we are blind. And often we have a moment of feeling hopelessness. And so I think that this is really quite stunning, because while it speaks in so many ways of the force of nature, it also speaks of the way in which life captures us in these blizzards, in these decisions. And we start to realize that the trail that we came from, the path that we know, is no longer there and cannot be found. And we have to have that reconciling with ourselves. So just a stunning write. And what did you think, Faith, having read it?
I love that ending too. The repetition of I'm alone, and you know, starting off with the trying to convince yourself with the but I'm better, it seems like kind of that mantra to yourself. It's like, you know, it was the right choice, I did the good thing, I should have left, it was good that I left. And then you say, but I'm alone. Like there's this kind of realization that maybe it wasn't the right choice, or at least maybe if it's not true that it's not the right choice, that doubt that or that realization that things are not quite what you hoped for. I really liked the wording of a trickle for the torment. I'm a sucker for alliteration, but I also love the word trickle. Something about the R's and the CK's, it's just trickle. A trickle for the torment. Sounds almost like a tongue twister. And a volume for the fears. And then you got to think about the gator tears, so that those fake crocodile tears. And interesting that it chose gator instead of crocodile, but maybe that's just for meter's purpose of having them the lines the right length. I thought this was really well done. I quite enjoyed reading it, but that ending, I'm alone, is what really hit me.
Oh, absolutely. And I too love the idea of trickle, because the imagery that trickle brings up is so poignant to me. Kind of that start of a gush, that those little drips and drops. And I always think of it in the way of like a drop that you kind of see like weave down, and maybe it pauses and another one comes and hits it and forces it down further. But even the Valium for the fear, it hints that he is self-medicating, or they are self-medicating with perhaps from a bottle or, a pill from a bottle, just different ways to kind of cope with the decisions and the consequences that have come and how often those are the things that also lead us further astray. So that was a really stunning comment piece. Thank you for that. Up next, we have the poem They Just Ain't Right by Lawrence 67, and I'll give this one a read. The Adventures of Nigel, the Fat Cat, and His Homie Alfie. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Lawrence 67 Airways. We will be flying an average speed of break the sound barrier, so make sure that your seatbelts are securely fastened. We have been known to make some sick, so if you feel nauseous, please release the paper bag above your head and vomit in a direct pattern, and your exits, as the attendant is pointing to, if we do crash. File out in controlled, hysterical manner and run like hell. Thank you again for flying Lawrence 67, and enjoy your poem. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and His Homie Alfie in The Intruder. Hey, Nigel, what you doing? Alfie, stay back. I'll take care of this big, ugly intruder. Don't you know who I am? I'm Nigel the Fat Cat. And no, I ain't no rat. I got a black belt in karate. Meow. Oh, wow. What did you say? Did you say you don't play? Well, that's okay. Take this and take that, you big ugly cat. You can't survive Nigel's attack. Nigel, you're getting queerer fighting that cat in the mirror. End poem. And Faith, what did you think about this?
I think it's hilarious. I love the, like, warning at the beginning with the airplane thing. It's, like, preparing us to read the poem. I love it. You know, if you're feeling nauseous, you know, vomit in a direct pattern. the cat's fighting itself in the mirror is such a fun ending. I'm a little curious what the decision is here, how it works with your contest, but this was hilarious. I really liked the personality of the cat and the introduction. This has a great sense of humor.
Oh, I fully agree. This really was quite a fun read, especially after all the heavy pieces that we've read this afternoon or this evening. I really did enjoy kind of the, you know, be prepared on this flight. We could have some turbulence having just flown. It is squarely in my mind. But I really like how they kind of a little bit of fun. And then the tale, of course, you know, here is Nigel the Fat Cat saying that he's fighting an intruder and it's just himself. I would agree. I don't necessarily see the decision in this, but if I might, your question made me kind of sit and ruminate as I was reading about this, because it is such a fun story and it's goofy and it doesn't really directly seem to relate to the prompt of hard decisions. But so often we also see someone in the mirror who we don't know. I'm getting to the age, I'm in my mid-30s, but I'm getting to the age where, like, because of my job and because of stress, well, I have like one eyebrow that's starting to turn like a little bit white. No hairs on my head, just my eyebrow. I do have some of those smile lines. And sometimes I look at my, remember looking like all this, I start to see the age on my face. And so perhaps it's those moments when we don't recognize ourselves and we have to look back on who we think we are versus who we are in reality. And so while this is goofy and perhaps even satirical, I think that it does point to the way in which we lose ourselves because of the images that we portray, the dysphoria of reality to these people who we want to be, and the confirmation bias that we even allot to ourselves and how we view ourselves. So maybe I'm just stretching, but it is a delightful tale. But I do have to wonder if there's a little bit of poking behind there, because we all know that, especially with social media, what people often portray in pictures and in status updates are not always the raw truth of what we see. And maybe that leaves us fighting a mirror image of ourselves. So really quite a fun, delightful write. And up next, we have Lost Soul by Kenny W. And Faith, could you give this one a read? Do you have a bit of gray at the front, like Rogue, for real?
Yes.
I am
It's just
so
this one
jealous.
Little chunk.
I have,
I'm like, if I can just keep this one part, I like it. I'm actually going to keep it. I'm not going to dye that part. But I just, I don't know. We'll see how the rest of it goes. For now, it's that one little piece, and it's like I'm magic.
Oh, my gosh. So we have a bit of time. We've got 24 minutes, and we've got this poem and a poem that I've brought. So we can shoot the shit a little bit. But as some people know, I'm sure listeners, and I'm sure you know because I've spoken about it on the shows. My sister's best friend, her husband passed away unexpectedly in August, and she too, like ever since high school, she's had white hair. Her family just goes white quickly. My family, on the other hand, my parents are in their 60s, well into their 60s. And my mom, for the most part, never dyed her hair, still has the majority of her hair color. And my dad is just starting to turn white. So I think I kind of tease my husband that that's the reason that he has grays, because he's younger than me. He has grays. We are finding more and more gray hairs on him every day. But I have like just my left eyebrow, and I've got like 5 gray hairs on there. So I keep teasing him, like, I don't have any. But Amanda, the one who lost her husband, like you, has a rogue streak. And her husband was always like, you can't dye your hair because I love it. And I have to admit, like, I'm jealous of it. I wish that I looked that badass. But instead, I just still have my color except for an ornery eyebrow that wants to turn white on me. So.
But you have such a beautiful red. Like, you know, I hope that you get to keep your red because it's awesome. I haven't had my eyebrows changed yet. That's interesting.
Well,
I've noticed my husband's beard is changing before his hair.
Really? Yeah, I don't know what it is with my eyebrow. It's like, I just looked at it. I've got like 5 ornery hairs on there that are white, and they're white, and they're like the old lady hairs too. Like they're like not normal length. So I'm always like, oh, God, my eyebrow. It's just my left side.
Oh,
now.
I do have one hair that's like that I always pull out. The one crazy eyebrow hair that's like weirdly shaped and like extra thick. I don't know.
Yeah.
That one freak hair.
Yeah, I got 5. I do think, though, like, fun fact. So I, you know, moles, beauty marks, call them what you will. I'm born naturally redheaded, and so I'm pale, but I have a ton of freckles everywhere because, you know, obviously it's all the souls I've devoured. But I have a mole actually in my left eyebrow that you can't really tell. For the most part, it's pretty flat. It's just a very small mole. I've had it my whole life, and that's the source of my unruly white eyebrow hairs. So I've decided that that's what it is, but I can't have it removed or else I'm just gonna have like this random bald patch in my eyebrow, and that's even weirder. So
it's all right. Embrace the gray. You know, we'll take on a new thing. You know, maybe you're not Pulgara or a rogue, but you could be like a dragon or like, I don't know. Pick something that has
with
cool
my one
eyebrow.
White eyebrow.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh. All right, well, you want to take this poem away?
Sure.
I'm okay not talking
Lost
about my one white eyebrow, but know that I'm jealous of your rogue hair.
Lost Souls by Kenny W. When presented with two paths, we men find it difficult to ask which way is better for us, which road is best to trust. A woman would consult to ensure the best result, left leading to eternity, right forever to be free. A man may ignore both ways, go down the middle anyway, ignore advice or any signs, go on regardless and resigned. 'Tis like if you drive lost in a car, the man guesses where you are. The woman says, let's stop and ask. The man continues to the last. So women reach a destination safe, some men perhaps with deviation, but it is the deviation we applaud, as in life, it opens doors. End poem.
Beautiful read, Hayes. I really like that, and I believe that he is hinting at Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken, the presentation of the two paths, figuring out which way to go, and how men, even the play on how men really want to kind of figure it out for themselves, but women are willing to have the consultation, be it the actual driving directions or perhaps even speaking about those decisions with our peers. And I wonder if that's kind of the play on it, that perhaps men are not willing always to say, oh, you know, what's your opinion on this? And instead, they leave it up to figuring out themselves. They leave it up to figuring out how they want to go, where they want to go, how they want to do it, and then sharing the good when it comes, whereas women, I think, tend to be more communal. You know, we share the jokes of the gray eyebrows, and we enjoy those moments, even if we don't always like things about ourselves or like the path that we're on. We share the joys. We share the tribulations. We share those moments when we want opinions. And so, yeah, we often, women have a longer life expectancy than men. So, yeah, often we do reach our destination perhaps a little safer. But men maybe need that exploration. And I like how he shows the validity of both of those paths. It's not to say that women don't go exploring and that men don't occasionally commune between each other. But there is, in many ways, the uniqueness and the beauty that comes with both. You know, men are on those strange adventures that, yeah, sure, they might be lost and they might look silly, but, you know, they're also gathering experience that way, whereas women are building that community around themselves. And again, not black and white, but a mix there in between. But a stigma is a stigma for a reason. So I think that this is really quite a stunning piece because it kind of talks about the deliberation of those two paths, the deliberation of which way to go and how we get there. And that in the end, people usually wind up where they're supposed to be. Maybe a little worse for wear, maybe a little safer. Maybe they got there a little faster and got to do some adventures at the end. But either way, we usually end up where we're supposed to be. And he got to see his perspective of perhaps why not to ask for direction. So it was a really, really awesome piece. And Faith, what did you think of this?
I thought the way this was written had just the right amount of humor in it. I would say that the differences between men and women in terms of this have changed quite a bit in the last generation. I feel like women are more likely to now try to prove their independence and be like, I don't need help, to fight that stereotype of asking for directions. And men are the opposite, where they don't want to get teased about being afraid, so they will ask directions. I feel like we rebel against our stereotypes to the point where we become the opposite. My favorite part here is when the man ignores both ways and goes down the middle anyway. It's like the path forks, and he's like, well, I don't want to make a decision, so I'm just going to, like, plow through the forest. And I feel like that would totally be my husband, because he's, like, the most difficult at making decisions. Like, he'll just, like, forever debate about which way to go, whereas I'm fairly impulsive. I'll just go whatever feels right. Or I'll look it up, but I still generally know what I want. He'll be indecisive. So I can just imagine him being like, well, if I go in the middle, I can probably see which way the roads are leading. make his own path. So I thought that part was cute. I love the ending where it is the deviation we applaud, as in life it opens doors. So, you know, sometimes when you take your own path rather than follow what might have been originally the smart one, you do come across things in a different way that can open up doors for other people, because they're like, oh yeah, we could have done that like the whole time. That way works nicely. You know, taking the path less traveled by, like you said, referring to the famous poem, is referenced here, but it's done in a humorous way that I appreciate.
Oh, absolutely. And I love too how you even mentioned that while we've abided by those stereotypes for a very long time, in many ways we do rebel against it. And I was on mute at the time, but you're like, you know, I don't need no help. I was, what went through my head was, I don't need no man. Because yes, us women have rebelled against that, and men are starting to, and they have been, I shouldn't say starting, but they have been finding ways to reinvent themselves. I mean, you have TikToks that are about men who are stay-at-home spouses, and that's not something that would have been talked about a long time ago, if at all. In fact, when my husband and I started having babies, I remember he took our youngest to the doctor, and the staff originally treated him as if he did not know what he was doing, because historically the men aren't the child rearers, but because of how life has worked out, he is the primary caregiver for our kids. So he has more knowledge of how many wet diapers our daughter had during the day, and how many soiled diapers and all that kind of stuff, because I'm just not home. I can't be when I'm working. So I really, really love how you even remind us that these stereotypes are broken, how we change and grow, not just as individuals, even as a society, to start rethinking some of these rules of thumbs that we've so long abided to and by. So stunning, stunning comment, Dave. All right. This is just, I don't think I've shared this one on the show before, so I figured I'd bring this just because it's called Breaking Point. It's not necessarily about a decision or the consequences thereof, but sometimes we all have our own breaking point, and it can affect us materially. So I'm going to give this a read, and then I'd love for you to tell me what you've got going on this week, Dave. So this is Breaking Point by me, Victoria Frost. I can trace the lines that cross my ribs, the cracks left upon my cheeks, each tear a reminder that my skin is raw. Deep breaths are infrequent, caught in moments of failed composure, a prequel to suffocated screams and saturated pillows aren't enough to quell the cold that now resides within my breast. The star has burst its light, life snuffed out, replacing my heart with the deadly remains of its existence. Time is warped in these hours slowly, as these hours slowly pass, unable to escape the gravitational pull of reality, devouring each scrap of my soul, leaving naught but a fragile husk with its hollow smile and a vacant gaze. End poem. You can just tell us what's going on. Because it feels awkward asking for comments.
No, I can comment. I'm kind of still lost in it, so I might take a second to collect my thoughts. I really liked each tear a reminder that my skin is raw. And then a prequel to suffocated screams in saturated pillows. Wow. Oddly enough, it's like I'm in love with the last line of each stanza, but especially that, a prequel to suffocated screams in saturated pillows. I mean, the saturated part is really important because it's just absolutely soaked with your tears. But also the fact that you're calling it a prequel because, it is that kind of foreshadowing of what's going to come, those deep breaths and those moments of failed composure are the hints at the full breakdown that's coming later. And that blankets are not enough to quell that cold, because it's amazing how a deep sadness can feel like actual cold. And I think it actually has something to do with, like, your circulation system and stuff because of the way that it just affects you. But it's just, it feels like a chill that is just unbearable. And like, you bring that to life, the physical manifestation of emotions, which are so often overlooked. You know, depression is a very physical disease. When you have true depression, it has a lot of physical ramifications, and the same thing with grief. You can feel it physically. Replacing my heart with the deadly remains of its existence. It's just, there's so much feeling in this. You know, I commented on it months ago that it gave me goosebumps, and I stand by that. It gave me goosebumps again. Devouring each scrap of my soul, leaving naught but a fragile husk with its hollow smile of vacant gaze. Goosebumps. I stand by my original comment.
Thank you, Faith. This was actually a poem that I had in my draft since January, at the beginning of this year. I often miscarry more children than I have because I have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and so my body just doesn't do pregnancy well. This was actually written when I found out that I had lost another baby, and I was actively miscarrying it. And so this is kind of that expression of pain and grief of it. So thank you for sharing your beautiful comments. Truly.
I'm so sorry for your loss. I know I'm very familiar with that pain, and it's a special kind of grief, one that's not always acknowledged. And I think that it's really important to express it and to show people that it has such an impact.
Absolutely. My dad, I've said this before, but I'll say it again for any new listeners. My dad's a doctor, a radiologist, diagnostic radiologist to be exact. And so somehow we had gotten on the topic of miscarriages, and in the normal he just does not have a high emotional intelligence. So he was like, everybody, a lot of women have miscarriages and they don't know it. They're called chemical pregnancies. It's often before we register that we're actually pregnant, you know, before 5 weeks. We may or may not have missed a period. We may think that we're just kind of late. Then we just have an abnormally bad period. But I've had 6 diagnosed pregnancies with only 2 that are successful. And so I was talking to him about that, and his natural response was, "You probably have more." And I was just like, oh. But it does remind us of how common it is. And while some people are more aware of it or some people have struggled through it, I do think that it is a topic, having just passed the Rainbow Baby Month, it is a reminder of how affected people are by this, how often it happens, and that it is a, at least for me and I'm sure for many others, it is a true loss. It's the future that never was, the one that you dreamed about and you don't get to have. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening to my poem and for commenting on it. And on to happier topics, what have you got going on this week?
I have a few contests. So for Part Center, Part Saint, I have a contest called Bones Will Talk, and it is quotes from the blog Becoming Dawn. And there's quotes by a few different people, but Becoming Dawn kind of collected them and wrote a blog post about it. So I took some of her kind of memes, the quotes on pictures that I found inspirational. And yeah, you can check that out for Parts Center, Parts Saint, Bones Will Talk. And then for an upcoming Double Helix, it's not this week, we have more from that blog that I discovered, but different quotes. They are from a few different people who, and they're about kind of discovering yourself, you know, getting into the dark side of yourself. Dig deep and think about what nourishes you, what brings you down. In Double Helix, we always want it to be a very personal, right? Something that gets to the essence of who you are. Plus, I have a musical tournament going on, Beat Wars, and with that, I provide the background music, and then I ask that you try to write lyrics to it. So one of them is due in a day, and then there's another one that's in 2 weeks, and there's going to be 10 contests total, so we're on number 3 and number 4 are open right now, and I just would love to hear some songwriters try that out.
I have to say, I got to enter your first one, and I missed the second one. I'm not going to miss the third one. I've been listening to that one actually while I was at my sister's and thinking about it, and I love the music that you picked for that third one. So thank you for that reminder, because I have been meaning to write for it. But yeah
you got to get on that. It's almost due. For those of you who haven't heard Victoria sing, you need to hear Victoria sing. She has the most gorgeous voice. She did enter the first contest for the songwriting, and I was blown away. I did not realize she had this voice. So check out her singing. It's amazing.
Check out all the entries. They are all truly, truly, they're amazing. Amazing. I'm so at awe. I'm just in awe of all the musical creators on allpoetry.com. So All Poetry is not just the poetry site. Be sure to check out the people who also write the lyrics, because there is some really cool stuff and phases of contests are. But yes, I'm definitely going to get something in for 3, and I'm going to go check out 4. We do not have a topic next week yet for Hearts of LNP, but we are going to be figuring something out. Probably not a contest. This is just kind of a one-off, given that I've been traveling and dealing with family stuff. But we do have, probably in about a month, we're going to have a new seriality with Rex, Pam, and I. And we are going to be looking at, I think we're going to look at Family Annihilators. So we shall be on the lookout for that contest. I think Pam is going to host it. Maybe I will. And as always, be sure to check out our topics. We have shows every night of the week. You can find us on LNP After Midnight at Blog Talk Radio, or Late Night Poets at Blog Talk Radio. We got a little something for everyone. And until then, good night. And thank you, Faith, for joining us. You are amazing for joining me. You are amazing. All right.
Good night.